Welcome back, everybody. We're diving right back into U.S. politics, specifically electoralvote.com's coverage from December 5th, 2024. We've got Trump's nominees, Congress doing what Congress does best, and of course, some fascinating action from the courts.
Trump's second term is certainly off to an eventful start, to say the least.
That's putting it mildly. Let's start with the DEA nominee, Sheriff Chad Chronister. You know, the one who just withdrew amidst a wave of criticism.
Chronister's withdrawal is interesting. It highlights a growing tension within the Republican Party. You've got the law and order folks, right? Evidenced by Chronister's arrest of that pastor who defied COVID lockdown orders.
Yeah.
But then there's the faction that's really focused on religious freedom and individual liberty. And, you know, they saw Chronister's actions as straight up government overreach.
Yeah, it does seem like his own party turned against him. It makes you wonder about the whole vetting process for these nominees. And it's not just the optics, right? I mean, Chronister's background is mostly local law enforcement. How does that experience really prepare him to lead the DEA, which, you know, focuses on these huge international drug cartels?
Yeah, that's a really good point. The DEA needs a very specific skill set, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's not clear that Chronister's background really fits the bill.
And then there's the whole thing with his son, George Chronister. Got involved in that stabbing a while back, even made a rap video about it. Regardless of whether that reflects on Chronister himself, it adds another layer to the whole thing.
Definitely raises questions about judgment. Adds another layer of scrutiny, for sure.
Okay, moving on to another nominee that's causing a stir, Tulsi Gabbard. Trump's pick for a top intelligence position, but she's facing some serious pushback over her ties to Russia.
Her nomination raises some big red flags when it comes to national security. Some lawmakers are really concerned. I mean, her past statements and actions regarding Russia, they really make you wonder, can she be trusted with this kind of sensitive information?
Definitely a situation we need to keep a close eye on. Now, this next one is a real doozy. Pete Hegseth, the former Fox News host, is Trump's choice for defense secretary, and his nomination is not going over well.
Well, Hegseth's background is, to put it mildly, concerning. He was fired from not one, but two veterans groups that he led. There are allegations of sexual assault, alcohol abuse. Even his own mother has publicly denounced him. These are serious red flags that you just can't ignore.
It's really striking when you see his past actions next to his public persona. He's always pushing this image of traditional family values.
It's a stark contrast, for sure. Raises some serious questions about his character and judgment. You know, qualities that are absolutely essential for someone in that position.
Absolutely. And people are already speculating about potential replacements if Hegseth's nomination goes down in flames. Ron DeSantis's name has been thrown around a lot, which is kind of ironic considering his rivalry with Trump.
DeSantis does have a strong resume. Military experience, executive experience as governor. But that relationship with Trump, it could get messy, create a very volatile dynamic within the administration.
Can you imagine those two trying to work together? Talk about a political showdown. And then there's Senator Joni Ernst, who is being talked about as a dark horse candidate.
She's an interesting possibility. Military experience, reputation for being more moderate, bipartisan. If Trump nominates her, it might signal that he's willing to, you know, bridge the divide, at least in some areas.
Yeah, that would shake things up a bit. Speaking of shaking things up, Kash Patel is back, you know, that familiar face from Trump's first term. And of course, he's already facing criticism. This time it's for promoting these detox supplements. He claims they counteract the effects of COVID-19 vaccines.
Patel's actions really tap into this ongoing debate about misinformation and the anti-vaccine movement. These claims about the supplements are unsubstantiated and potentially dangerous, really. They prey on people's fears, you know, distrust of mainstream science.
It is concerning to see someone in a position of potential power promoting something like this, especially with, you know, all the public health challenges we're still dealing with.
It raises questions about his judgment, his motives for sure, and also about how we address the spread of misinformation in the digital age.
That's a problem that doesn't seem to be going away anytime soon. So Trump's cabinet is, shall we say, in a state of flux. Let's shift gears and see what's going on in Congress. Senate Majority Leader John Thune is ready to hit the ground running. He's setting a pretty ambitious legislative agenda for Trump's first 30 days.
He's aiming to pass two major bills, one focusing on border security, defense, and energy, and the other on, you guessed it, tax cuts. And to avoid any potential roadblocks, he's planning to use the budget reconciliation process, which, you know, allows for expedited passage, but does come with some specific restrictions.
Okay, so for those of us who don't speak fluent Congress, what does budget reconciliation actually mean?
Basically, it lets certain budgetary bills get passed with a simple majority in the Senate. They can bypass the usual 60-vote threshold needed to overcome a filibuster, but these bills have to follow strict guidelines. They need to mainly focus on budgetary matters, and they can't increase the deficit beyond a 10-year window.
So it's a powerful tool, but it has its limitations. And to make things even more complicated, the Republicans only have a razor-thin majority in the House, which gives the Freedom Caucus, that group of super conservative House Republicans, a lot of leverage.
Exactly. They could demand concessions or even threaten to completely derail bills. If the bills don't align with their, shall we say, very specific priorities, Thune's going to have to walk a tightrope to get his agenda through.
Sounds like we're in for some serious political maneuvering. And while the Republicans are dealing with their slim majority, the Democrats are having their own internal shakeups. They're looking to replace some of their senior leaders with younger representatives.
It's a generational shift, really, bringing in fresh voices, new perspectives. Like the race for the top Democrat spot on the House Oversight Committee. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is emerging as a potential frontrunner.
Wow. AOC leading a powerful committee. That would definitely change the game.
It shows the growing influence of those progressive voices within the Democratic Party. You know, AOC's youth, charisma, and her mastery of social media, she's a force to be reckoned with.
It could really signal a shift in the direction of the Democratic Party, bringing a much more progressive agenda to the forefront.
It'll be fascinating to see how it all plays out.
Yeah.
And what it means for the future of the party.
Speaking of high-stakes decisions, the Supreme Court is about to hear a major case. It concerns a Tennessee law banning gender-affirming care for minors. This case has huge implications for transgender rights. It could set a legal precedent for similar laws all over the country.
The arguments on both sides are really interesting. They go deep into these fundamental questions about parental rights, individual autonomy, the role of the government in healthcare.
Yeah, at the core of the debate is this question. Do sex discrimination laws apply to transgender individuals? And can the state restrict access to medical care for minors, even if they have parental consent?
It's complicated. There are no easy answers. The court's ruling will have a huge impact on the lives of transgender youth and their families.
And to add another layer of intrigue, some people believe Justice Neil Gorsuch could be the deciding vote, given his history of, well, unpredictable rulings. It's anyone's guess which way he'll go on this one.
Gorsuch is the swing vote. It really highlights the power that each individual justice has on the Supreme Court. Their decisions can shape the legal and social landscape for generations.
Speaking of power and influence, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is in the news. He's criticizing two federal judges who, get this, initially planned to retire, but then they changed their minds after Trump's reelection. McConnell is accusing them of playing politics with their positions.
It's interesting, isn't it? Considering McConnell's own track record with judicial appointments. Let's not forget how he blocked Merrick Garland's nomination to the Supreme Court. During Obama's presidency, he said the people should decide who fills the vacancy during an election year.
Right, but then he rushed through Amy Coney Barrett's confirmation just weeks before the 2020 election.
It really highlights the partisan nature of the judicial confirmation process these days. Makes you wonder if it's more about political maneuvering than qualifications anymore.
It seems like every move in Washington is carefully calculated and the stakes are so high. Speaking of calculated moves, did you hear about Senator George Helmy from New Jersey?
Oh yes, quite a unique situation.
He's retiring after serving just 91 days in the Senate. It's got to be some kind of record for shortest senatorial career.
It's a result of the complexities of political appointments and the importance of seniority in the Senate. You see, he was appointed to fill Bob Menendez's seat after Menendez was convicted on corruption charges.
So it was basically a strategic move to make sure that Congressman Andy Kim, who's expected to take over the seat, could start building seniority as soon as possible.
Exactly. Seniority is everything in the Senate. It affects committee assignments, legislative priorities. This move gives Kim a head start, which could lead to a longer, more influential career in the Senate.
It's amazing how even something as seemingly minor as an appointment can have these long-term implications in politics.
It's like a game of chess, really. Every move matters.
Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground here in part one of our deep dives, from controversial nominees to power struggles in Congress to high-stakes legal battles. U.S. politics is never boring. What are your initial thoughts on all of this?
It's been a whirlwind of activity. What really stands out to me is how these events show just how divided we are. These deep partisan divisions, the ideological clashes, they're shaping everything. We're seeing power struggles within parties as much as between them, and the stakes are incredibly high.
And we haven't even touched on Biden's post-presidency plans yet. Stay tuned for part two, where we'll discuss what's next for the former president and much more.
Yeah, Biden's next chapter. It's interesting to think about what that'll look like now that he's out of the White House.
Yeah, I bet it'll be a mix of things. He's talked about writing his memoirs. I'm sure those would be full of insights into his career in politics and, of course, you know, his historic presidency.
His memoirs would definitely give us a unique perspective on, well, on a lot of things that have happened recently. And knowing Biden, he'll probably keep advocating for the things he's always been passionate about, you know, like climate change, healthcare reform, social justice.
Yeah, I can definitely see him staying active in those areas, using his experience and influence to, you know, to really push for progress.
His voice still carries a lot of weight, even if he's not in the Oval Office anymore. People will still want to hear what he has to say. I'm sure he'll be giving advice on domestic and international issues.
It's hard to imagine him just, like, disappearing from public life. He just seems to thrive on being involved and making a difference.
It'll be interesting to see what he does with this, you know, this new phase of his career.
Absolutely. Okay, so we've talked about the executive branch, Congress, even the Supreme Court. But there's another big player in American politics we should talk about. The media.
The media. Oh, yeah, they play a huge role in shaping public opinion and influencing the political landscape.
And it seems like the media landscape itself is changing all the time, especially with the rise of social media and all these online news outlets. How do you see these changes affecting the way people get their political information?
Well, social media has definitely made things more fragmented. People tend to get their news from sources that already agree with what they believe, which can lead to these echo chambers where, you know, people just hear what they want to hear.
Right, and that just reinforces those partisan divisions we were talking about earlier.
Exactly. And it's also made it so much easier for, well, for misinformation and disinformation to spread.
It's a challenge, but also an opportunity. With so many voices and platforms out there, it's more important than ever for people to be, you know, to be critical thinkers, to really evaluate the information they're getting.
Absolutely. Media literacy is more important now than ever before.
And speaking of complex environments, let's zoom out a bit and look at the global stage. What are some of the biggest international challenges facing the U.S. right now?
Well, there are a lot of challenges on the global front. Tensions with China, ongoing conflicts in various regions.
China's growing power, both economically and militarily, is definitely a concern. How do you see that relationship evolving in the next few years?
The relationship between the U.S. and China is one of the most important relationships in the world. It's this complex mix of cooperation and competition. Yeah. Both countries want to be the, you know, the global leader.
It seems like finding the right balance between cooperation and competition is key. We need to find ways to work together on things like climate change and global health, but also stand firm when, you know, when our values and interests clash.
Yeah, it's a delicate balancing act. You need to really understand the nuances of the relationship.
And of course, we can't forget about the situation in Ukraine.
Oh, right. The conflict in Ukraine. It shows just how fragile peace and security can be, not just in Europe, but everywhere. The U.S. and its allies have imposed sanctions and sent military aid to Ukraine, but it's still a very tense situation.
It's a reminder that things can escalate quickly. And that diplomacy and international cooperation are, you know, they're essential to resolving these conflicts peacefully.
Couldn't agree more. What happens in one part of the world can affect everyone.
So much to keep track of. We've talked about a lot today, from what's happening in Washington to what's going on around the world. What are some key takeaways you think people should remember from all of this?
Well, politics is constantly changing. These stories we talked about, they're just snapshots in time. Things can change quickly.
That's true, which is why it's so important to stay informed and engaged.
Absolutely. And it's important to remember that politics affects everything. The economy, healthcare, education, it's all connected.
And maybe most importantly, we all have a role to play in shaping our political system.
Exactly. Whether it's voting, having conversations about these issues, or advocating for what you believe in, we can all make a difference.
We're not just watching from the sidelines. We have the power to influence the direction of our country and our world.
That's a good point.
Well, that wraps up part two of our deep dive. Stay tuned for part three, where we'll explore even more of the challenges and opportunities facing the U.S. in this new political era. All right, welcome back to our deep dive into U.S. politics. We've covered a lot of ground, the power struggles in Washington, the global challenges. But as we've said, politics is always changing, so
let's talk about some of the trends that are shaping the future of American politics. What's on the horizon? What are you seeing out there?
Well, one of the biggest trends, I think, is the growing polarization in our society. That gap between Democrats and Republicans, it just keeps getting wider. And it makes it harder to find any common ground to pass any meaningful legislation.
It really does feel like they're just talking past each other more and more. And social media, it doesn't help, does it? It seems like it's just amplifying these divisions, creating these echo chambers where people only see what they already believe.
Yeah.
Social media's impact on political discourse is huge. It can be a great tool, don't get me wrong, for organizing, for activism, but it can also be a breeding ground for misinformation, hate speech, all of that. So finding ways to have, constructive dialogue to combat that harmful content, it's a big challenge.
It's a tough one for sure. But aside from the partisan divide, what other trends should people be aware of?
Well, technology is playing a bigger role in politics. We're seeing more sophisticated use of data analytics, artificial intelligence, social media, all of it. And it raises questions about privacy, transparency, manipulation,
Yeah, it's like a whole new battleground for political strategy. And it's not just campaigns either. Technology is affecting governance too, like algorithms being used in decision-making processes, criminal justice, welfare benefits. It makes you wonder about bias, accountability.
Yeah, those are valid concerns. As technology becomes more and more integrated into our political systems, we have to make sure those systems are fair, transparent, and accountable.
Accountability, that's a good word. And speaking of accountability, I've noticed that there's a growing demand for political transparency and ethical conduct.
Yeah, people are feeling like this system isn't working for them. They want more accountability from their leaders. They're more skeptical, of the powers that be.
There's this growing distrust of institutions, this desire for more authentic, more responsive leadership.
And that desire for change is fueling this surge in grassroots activism. We're seeing more people, especially young people, getting involved in politics in new ways, creative ways. They're demanding action on climate change, racial justice, economic inequality.
It really is inspiring to see so many people getting involved. It gives me hope that things can change. But realistically, how much impact can these movements really have on the system? It's so entrenched, you know?
That's the million-dollar question. These movements, they're challenging the status quo. They're pushing for a more inclusive and equitable system.
Hmm.
Will they succeed? It's hard to say. But they are being heard, and they're forcing the establishment to listen.
It's definitely a dynamic process, unpredictable at times. But that's what makes politics so fascinating, right? This constant struggle for power and influence.
That's a good way to put it.
So as we wrap up our deep dive, what's the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this?
Be an active citizen. In a democracy, it's not enough to just vote every few years. You have to be engaged, participate, advocate for what you believe in, hold your leaders accountable.
Well said. We all have a role to play in shaping the future of our country. And as we've seen, the political landscape is constantly changing. There are challenges ahead, for sure, but also opportunities. It's up to us to navigate all of it to create a better future. So stay curious, stay informed, and most importantly, stay engaged. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into the world of U.S. politics.